Hello, here is your KVNF regional newscast for Wednesday, November 29th. Governor John Hickenlooper's chief of staff resigned on Monday to rejoin a Denver law firm. As Benta Berkland reports, it's one of several high-profile resignations in recent months.
Chief of Staff Doug Freed-Nash is the latest to exit the administration. Three other cabinet members left this fall, including the heads of the Department of Transportation, Department of Labor and Employment, and the head of the agency that oversees Medicaid. Over the summer, the head of the Department of Revenue and Department of Regulatory Agencies both left. Hickenlooper, who is term limited, says it's to be expected, given that they will all be out of jobs soon. He says he will work to fill positions quickly, since he's about to begin his final legislative session as governor. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
Aquatic nuisance species can wreak havoc on ecosystems, outdoor recreation, hydroelectric power equipment, and the economy. As part of the Connecting the Drops series with the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Exchange, KGNU's Hannah Lee Myers joined a Colorado Parks and Wildlife team as they took samples at Green Mountain Reservoir in an effort to ward off the threatening species.
Colorado Parks and Wildlife define an aquatic nuisance species, or ANS, as
an aquatic nuisance species is a non-native species that has been introduced to a new location, has no predators, and has harmful impacts on our natural resources and the human use of those resources.
Robert Walters is the invasive species specialist for CPW. According to Walters, since 2008, CPW's invasive species department has monitored and worked to ward off many types of ANS, but one species is particularly worrisome.
Certainly the zebra and quagga mussel are the most concerning species to us. Those are the most costly invasive species in the entire United States.
And until recently, Colorado was 100% negative for those species. But in August, Bureau of Reclamation samples discovered quagga mussel larvae in Green Mountain Reservoir near Silverthorn.
What's the depth, Nathan?
8 feet.
Walters and I joined a CPW team as they collected samples across Green Mountain Reservoir. CPW's Nathan Anderson leads the sampling team, and he explained the process.
And then what Erin's doing right now is she's going to throw in this net. We'll do this 5 times. She'll pull it up and redrop it 5 times. And what this net is doing is filtering plankton out of the water. And we'll put the remaining plankton into a bottle. And we'll put a label on it and bring it back down to Denver, where we'll look at it under a microscope.
Thus far, all the samples have been negative. But on the way to inspect some rocks on the shore, Robert Walters explained the lingering anxiety about the mussel, considering their devastating effects on hydroelectric power systems like Lake Powell.
So there's all kinds of different gates and things that the water has to pass through in those hydroelectric systems. And when those get clogged up with the mussels, then they basically have to shut down those hydroelectric systems, and they have to bring in specialized divers and things to actually come in and clean those systems out before they can get them up and running again.
And that, says Walters, is incredibly expensive and ultimately impacts all of us.
Yep. And something that the public also, you know, should think about is, do you really think that the power industry just absorbs all those costs? Not a chance. They're passing that down to each and every person that's using that power in their house. So everybody really does pay for this if it ends up being a problem.
In addition to the damage caused to hydroelectric power systems, quagga mussel populations filter vital plankton down to the bottom of bodies of water, completely changing the ecosystem. CU Boulder's director of the Natural History Museum and professor of ecology and evolutionary biology, Pat Koselic, explains.
The fishes that live in these systems, the other invertebrates that live in these systems, they've evolved to be in this kind of plankton-dominated environment. So when it turns to be a benthic-dominated environment, how do those species adapt? Where do fish get their food? You know, that's the important piece here. It's not that the algae change necessarily. It's that the entire system changes, and the organisms that have to respond to those changes might not be able to do that in a fast time frame.
In September, Representative Jared Polis and nearly every member of Colorado's congressional delegation signed a letter written to Secretary of the Interior Ryan Zinke that Polis says asks for collaboration that he hopes will help the state successfully combat the quagga mussel.
There's areas of our country that have been facing this
for well over a decade. And we need to take that knowledge and what's worked and what hasn't worked and focus those resources on Green Mountain Reservoir and on Colorado to prevent further damage to our water ecosystems.
Back at Green Mountain Reservoir, the team has collected all the necessary samples that will be sent back to Denver for testing by the following Monday.
So the hope is on Monday that you hear that there is nothing in these.
Exactly. And a good day in the office is finding nothing.
As state lawmakers and agencies launch into the fight against the quagga mussel, it remains true that just one contaminated object that skips the decontamination process can sabotage the entire effort. So it's up to Coloradans of all sorts to keep aquatic nuisance species out of the state. For Connecting the Drops and Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Hanalee Myers.
Connecting the Drops is a collaboration between Rocky Mountain Community Radio stations and Water Education Colorado. Find out more at yourwatercolorado.org. Support is provided by CoBank, which provides financing solutions to rural water systems. Learn more at cobank.com.
The deadline for public comment on changes to sage-grouse habitat conservation plans was extended to Friday. Oil and gas companies in Colorado stand to directly benefit from the BLM's proposed changes to the plan. Eric Gladys has this story.
As the deadline for public comments on the BLM's decision to consider modifying sage-grouse habitat management plans draws near, a conservation watchdog group has identified 10 oil and gas companies that stand to directly benefit. Jason O'Neill with the Western Values Project says half the companies that could see relaxed drilling rules on existing leases are members of the Western Energy Alliance, including Anadarko and ExxonMobil.
And they're directly related to the lobby group that has actively pursued these wholesale changes to sage-grouse management plans in the habitat in which they live.
More than 6 million acres of oil and gas leases in sage-grouse habitat are currently designated with heightened protections. O'Neill says the BLM's proposed changes are essentially a carbon copy of requests made in a leaked WEA letter to the Department of Interior. A spokesperson for the Interior Department said a number of stakeholders, including representatives from sage-grouse states across party lines, had an opportunity to weigh in on the agency's decision. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service decided not to list the greater sage-grouse as an endangered species, even though the bird's population has declined by nearly 95% from historic numbers. O'Neill says if the BLM removes protections, decades of work from stakeholders across 11 western states could be lost. He believes the current land management plans should be given a chance to work. The open comment period on habitat plans ends this Friday, December 1st. This is Eric Gladys reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
And that was your KVNF regional newscast for Wednesday. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould. Thanks for listening.